Devin saw the episode first last night, and she just emailed like a cryptic, "There's something you're going to love." And then Dalton asked me at like 5:15 in the morning if I had watched the episode yet, and I just woke up. And then I started watching, and then I just wrote to Dalton in capital letters. I'm like, "Was that effing z-?"
Helmets off, everyone! At least if your name is Bo-Katan Kryze. And welcome to another exciting edition of the Dagobah Dispatch. We have Chapter 21 of The Mandalorian, The Pirate, to talk about. And not only are we going to talk about it, but we are going to talk with Mandalorian executive producers Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni. Yes, the powers that be will be here with us. God help them. And as if all that is not enough, we also had the season finale of The Bad Batch. How did season 2 end up, and did it connect any further to what's happening in the live-action Star Wars galaxy? The answer is yes. Yes, it did. With a big Rogue One crossover, we'll get into that. We'll get into everything, because that's how we do here on the Dagobah Dispatch. I'm Dalton Ross, just hanging out here on a Delphi base with my co-pilots, Devin Kogan and Lauren Morgan. And I'll tell you, I'm just real rattled with those damn New Republic bureaucrats, Devin.
It's, you know, look, I do love how bureaucratic everything is. I love that we got, you know, one of my biggest questions going into this season was, we knew that Tim Meadows was going to show up at some point. And oh, he has a fun role, just getting to just be like a rubber stamper, like, just so easily manipulated, just like a good guy, but just kind of useless. So.
But by the way, shout out to the Ladies Man, which was one of my favorite SNL sketches. I feel like that's been lost to time because of the Ladies Man movie, which I always also will kind of like half defend. But Tim Meadows was like a very underappreciated SNL cast member. Was there for like 48 years, first off.
Yeah, he was there for a long, long time, too. So I'm glad he gets to pop up here, even if he is not helping out whatsoever. Though also, Ilya Kane still trying to do all of her, subterfuge in the background.
She's subterfuging. So. All right, so we're going to get all into the Mandalorian. New episode came out, Chapter 21. We got Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau on the podcast this week, which is super cool. Great to have them back. And then we will get into some Bad Batch stuff as well, because it was the season finale. And some big stuff did happen. And it does connect to some other live-action Star Wars stuff, like we said. So we'll get into that as well. But real quickly, you know I always like to bust out a sweet tweet, right, ladies?
Love
you
a sweet tweet.
If I found a sweet tweet out there, it's getting mentioned on the podcast. this week's sweet tweet is actually related to, to a review that we read last week. So last week, we read some reviews that people have been kind enough to leave us over on Apple Podcasts. And if you listen to the podcast, and if you want to give back to the podcast, you can give us a review there, and we'll read it on the air and give you a shout out. So it's a win-win. So someone by the name of Maul Rat, and that's, once again, M-A-U-L Rat, which is just so great. I love
incredible
that
name.
Left us a review, and as part of the review, it said, you know, sometimes you agree with what they're saying, sometimes you think they're way off, and then there's a parenthetical, and it said, especially on the pronunciation of a certain cereal that is spelled all caps CAP apostrophe N, then Crunch. So, we read the review, and we talked about said cereal a little more. So anyway, then a sweet tweet goes in my inbox. Do they have inboxes on Twitter? Is that the way that works? A mention, I guess, is what it was. And this, I think it's the same person, this guy, Steve Finney, who wrote and said, first off, had to make it clear after my iTunes review confused which side I'm on. Because it looked like at first, Steve was saying, hey, this should be, everyone knows it's called Captain Crunch. Dalton, stop being an idiot and calling it Cap'n Crunch just because it's C-A-P apostrophe N. And the way he wrote it makes it very clear that's the way he feels. But now in the sweet tweet, he's saying, actually, no, I think I'm more on the side that it should be Cap'n Crunch, not Captain Crunch. Now, he didn't just say that. He also offered up some Exhibit A in the
receipts.
That's right. In the court of serial pronunciation, he has, you know, this is part of the discovery process. He's provided this to all sides. Mm-hmm. And he has found, he has unearthed, if you will, the very first ever commercial that aired for this serial. So let's take a listen to the commercial and see if we get any valuable intel in terms of whether this cereal should be pronounced Captain Crunch or Cap'n Crunch. Let's take a listen.
Cap'n Crunch presents Breakfast on the Guppy.
We need to boost and go just to the... All I care about is like the first two words. Like, I don't care about anything else.
You're like an investigator on like a like an FBI show where you're like, zoom in and enhance.
CSI. Yeah.
This is...
That doesn't sharpen. And I'm like, that never
this
works.
Is, as far as I'm concerned, this is the Zapruder tape of breakfast morning cereal ads. We're going full Zapruder on this. All right. Let's hear the very beginning of this ad again.
Cap'n Crunch presents Breakfast on the Guppy.
I think that's Cap'n Crunch, ladies.
So here's my thing. I'm not arguing that there's a T in Cap'n, because there's not. But it's something about the way that you pronounce it, Dalton. It's like you add an extra P in there. You're like Cap'n.
Yeah, it sounds like.
And it's so weird to me. It's not. We're not arguing that there's a T in Cap'n Crunch, but it's more like Cap. There's like an apostrophe in there. But you pronounce it as it like Cap'n. And it's hilarious to me.
Yeah.
I love it.
I'm just pronouncing it the way it's on the box. That's
I would like to know what do the current Captain Crunch commercials use as their pronunciation?
This is true.
This
is true. Because it's like, aye, aye, Captain, which is like, normal. There's no T in there, but it's like there's something, but something about.
I don't think Dalton is pronouncing it the way it is in the commercial.
I don't think I am.
So it's like, you know, when people say like button versus button or, you know, but this is my favorite stupid thing. And I hope we continue to argue about this forever.
I argued for 8 years, 8 years on the radio with Jessica Shaw about the Peabody Awards, which she insists are called, should be pronounced Peabody. Oh. And she will not stop. And we even unearthed evidence of the president of the Peabody Awards pronouncing it Peabody Awards. And Jessica's like, he's wrong. It's Peabody. There's a town, Peabody, Massachusetts or somewhere. Someone's going to let us know.
Reminds me of two things that I go with my daughter. I argue about with my daughter, like the family in Encanto is called Madrigal and she refuses to admit that they are. She calls them Money Gun. And I'm like, it's not Money Gun. It's Madrigal. We literally had this, like, we keep having this fight. And the other thing is, and this is more me, I haven't corrected her, but when we even talk about commercials, for some reason, she's always pronounced it commercials. And so literally, and like, we've been like, my husband and I just can't correct her because it's too cute.
So it's so good.
Like, yeah, she just calls everything. She's like, I saw it on the commercial. And I'm like, eventually one of her teachers is going to catch her on it. But, right now we're just letting it be.
So. Well, shout out to this listener for bringing us this commercial, this Cap'n Crunch commercial.
That's right. Well,
I'm sure our audience is like, can we talk about the Mandalorian?
Maybe we should do that now. Let's talk about the Mandalorian, or whatever pronunciation we want to give it. Chapter 21, The Pirate. I mean, so let's just go big picture in terms of the episode. Then we can sort of go into some of the nooks and crannies a little bit. But essentially, it's... Gorian Shard, who I'm obsessed with because he's only been in two episodes now, but they say his name a million times. Like they're just like, so Gorian Shard. Remember that name, Gorian Shard, the Pirate King. Like it's like just, and like I said, he looks like a bad guy from like Pirates of the Caribbean's 8 or something. And he basically attacks Greef Karga because he won't let his like henchmen drink in a school. That's really seems to be what it comes down to here. And so
those pirates are just petty bees. Like they're just really bad, you know.
They are. I also love that they had one of the pirates here was named Vane, and they had a pirate on, what was that Starz pirate show? Black Sails called Vane as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of vain pirates. All right. So anyway, they attack Greef Karga. Greef Karga calls for help. We'll get into the fact that the Republic won't help him. Eventually, Carson Teva goes to and tracks down all the Mandalorians in their not so secret hiding spot and is like, hey, do this dude a solid. And so they do. And so all the Mandalorians go to Nevarro and they take on the Pirate King and they free Greef Karga and they decide we're all going to shack up here. And because he's given us land and we're coming out of the shadows into the open. Mm-hmm. And then you have the armorer says to Bo-Katan, hey, let's meet. Let's have a little chat here. And then she basically says, take off your helmet. You're the one who's going to unite Mandalore. You're the one that's going to bring all the factions together. You're not part of Children of the Watch. You are going to bring us together with other Mandalorian groups, and we're all going to prosper together. And there's other stuff we'll get into, too, and we'll get into the very, very ending in a little bit, too. But that's the basic structure of the story here, right? Save Greef Karga. Bo-Katan's going to lead us, and now we're coming out of the shadows. Let's just start there. Devin, tell me your thoughts on the episode.
I like this episode. It was, you know, just like a nice, solid action story. You know, I was glad to see the return of Carson Tava. You know, I'm glad that the Mandalorians are getting away from whatever crappy little planet they've been hanging out on, because like, where did they move? It's like, are they in the middle of, you know, like a, like just, there's all these, there's constantly things from the sky trying to eat them, things from the water trying to eat them. It's like, they were like, this is the perfect place to make our new covert. Never mind all the giant, like murderous beasts who are trying to eat us. So hopefully there will be like less foundling kidnappings on Nevarro. So I think this is smart. I'm glad they're doing this.
Speaking of which, what happened to all like the Mandalorian foundlings? Did they just like disappear again? Like, I was watching at 3:30 in the morning, so I was a little woozy, but like all of a sudden we had all these like little mini tiny Jimmy Kimmel nephew Mandalorians. I came out of nowhere, and weren't they all like gone again, or were they hanging out?
They just, you know, they left him with a babysitter.
Yeah, maybe they were hanging in the back of Bo-Katan's ship. I didn't think her ship could fit that many people, yeah, but it seemed like it could fit a lot more people than I thought it could.
Look,
but
Din's ship can't fit more than, can't fit, you know, anybody.
Yeah,
so, Baby Yoda and an astromech. But that is kind of funny. So I wondered, like, did they have to be like, great, we'll accept the land. We're going to take a quick field trip back to pick up all of our many children and then come back. But no, good for them. I'm glad they're finally, you know, getting a place to live. They deserve that.
There must be a Mandalorian grandmother amidst that crew or grandfather who was just like, you know, I'm not going out on the mission. The knees are too creaky. I'm just going to stay here with the younglings. But, you know.
I would watch that spinoff, Mandalorian babysitter. But as we know, Mandalorians are great babysitters. Look at Din and Grogu. True. You know, this is what we've learned. But no, I really like this episode. I mean, I thought this episode was fun. I feel like a lot of the season has kind of been funny because there's been like a lot of plot points. And I think, you know, a lot of viewers have been like, where is this all going? How is this all going to connect? You know, we've got all this stuff about the Mythosaur and, you know, everything that's happening on Coruscant. And, you know, like kind of all these like sort of separate storylines. And here we see them all sort of finally starting to connect. So that's kind of, you know, an interesting point in the storytelling. You know, I dug this episode. What did you guys think?
I liked it. I thought I was glad to start. Well, first of all, I was glad Bo got to take her helmet off. And even though she seemed to be like, is this a trick? Because it looked like she's like, I'm going to take my helmet off and then you're going to kill me or something like that. But, you know, I'm glad to see that at least Katie Sackhoff gets to walk around without her helmet off.
I like, too,
I can't imagine that's pleasant.
And when she did it through all of them, like the show on the watch, she's like, sup? Like, you know, they're like, wait, why does she have her helmet off? She's like, that's right.
It did seem like she was a little bit like, but like when I think it was Paz Vizsla looked at Mando and Mando just nodded and he was like, well, okay, you know, and also but lucky, you know, she just saved his kid. So, you know, can he really be a jerk about it? So
here's the question, though. Do you think Mando is a little bit like, wait, you can do that?
Yeah.
Like you can be part of both worlds. Like, why can't I do that?
Yeah.
You know, he was a little bit like I love that, you know, the armorer was like, you know, you removed your helmet to say a forever goodbye to your small ward. And that's a punishable sin. But, you know, Bo-Katan, I'm just like, yeah, sure. Whatever. Take it off. I don't care.
Maybe the armorer's like, I know you're not really here because you believe in the watch, but you're just kind of alone. So I get it. But go find your other people and bring them back here. And we've got plans to make. So I think that she was just like, but I think also just the fact that she saw the Mythosaur and how much you know, I mean, I think that really made an impression on the armorer. So she's like, well, that's a sign.
Well, I think we all know where this is going, right? I think we all mm-hmm. see, and we've said this all season long, like, all right, Bo-Katan's going to lead Mandalore and, you know, take the throne yeah. and bring it back. I guess the question is, do we see that happening in three episodes now? Like, is that our season finale? Like, that she sort of brings in another clan over the next three episodes or two, and they all join together and they all, like, you know, give their version of all hail Bo-Katan and, like, you know, throw their arms in the air or fire up their jetpacks. And is that happening in the next three episodes?
Well, I didn't. I thought the Mines of Mandalore was going to happen way later in the season, so I don't really know. But it is like when we talk about the very end of the episode where Carson Teva finds that it seems like Moff Gideon has been taken by Mandalorian mercenaries, and we know that the rest of Bo-Katan's crew was working at mercenaries. So I'm pretty sure that, you know, Moff Gideon is coming back into this, because if you can have Giancarlo Esposito on your show, why don't you? Like, you know, I mean, obviously that's kind of just an easy move there. So I assume there's something coming with Moff Gideon and also the other members of Bo-Katan's crew and that kind of stuff. So I think there's going to be some conflict coming.
Lauren, why don't you, for those that didn't watch the animated shows, why don't you sort of just give a little bit of a history and just sort of what you're talking about now in terms of the relationship, in terms of some of these Mandalorian clans and their relationship to the Empire and how some worked for them and with them and some did not.
That's like the one thing, is to talk about the history of Mandalore. It gets very, very confusing because we have, this is the one thing, it's like, I wish they would actually name Bo-Katan's sister, because she was the leader of Mandalore for a while, but she was a pacifist, and Bo-Katan did not agree with her pacifist leanings, because, you know, most Mandalorians, as we see, are they're a fighting prone group of people. But there was this kind of group, Death Watch, that Bo-Katan had been working with, but they sort of undermined, and, like, you know, and that's the thing, is the interesting thing with the Vizslas, because the Vizslas are all up in that clan is all up in all of this conflict and stuff like that. So, like, all of these clans and houses have a big history with fighting with each other or fighting for power, fighting for dominance within Mandalore. So getting any of these clans to kind of, like, agree to with each other is kind of a huge task. And then we also have Clan Ren, which is where Sabine Wren from Star Wars Rebels comes in. And we know she's coming in the Ahsoka show. So I am curious to see if we're going to see parts of Clan Ren come in here. And if we're going to see Sabine at the end of this as, like, a bridge into, because, you know, Sabine was the person who kind of got the Darksaber and given it to Bo-Katan as to lead Mandalore before the Empire destroyed it. So,
I will say in our interview with Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni that you can hear right after our chat that I asked him very specifically about, with Ahsoka coming up, are we going to see members mm-hmm. of the Ghost crew at all? Of course, they're cagey in their answer. But of course, speaking of the Ghost crew, in this episode, there was a big cameo appearance down at a Delphi base. First off, before we get to that real quickly, we'll leave people mm-hmm. on their edge of their seat for a second. I love that the entire, like, Mandalorian creative team was in this bar as Rebel pilots. Yeah. You know, Dave Filoni as Trapper Wolf was there. Rick Famuyiwa as Job Dodger. And then Deborah Chow was in there, too.
The funny thing is, at the time, I didn't even notice the rest of them because I was focused on one specific person in the scene. So I like I saw in the credits, I was like, oh, like, where were they? Like, I didn't.
You could see Filoni had like the Filoni hat on. He had like that typical.
Yeah,
Filoni
I was just like,
on, yeah.
I was like, oh, I should go back and watch it, because I was like, I was not paying attention to them.
All right, so tell us who we saw then, Lauren. I know you were excited.
We saw Zeb. Zeb from Star Wars Rebels makes his live action debut, and it was funny because Devin saw the episode first last night, and she just emailed, like, a cryptic, there's something you're gonna love. And then Dalton asked me at like 5:15 in the morning if I had watched the episode yet, and I just woke up, and then I started watching, and then I just wrote to Dalton in capital letters. I'm like, was that effing Zeb? Like, you know. So
I watched this episode last night, and mm-hmm. you know, Zeb shows up, and I'm like, okay, that sounds like him, that looks like him. But then I wanted to check in the credits, and I was like, yep, that's him. He's named, which is, I knew Lauren was gonna lose her mind, because when we did our Star Wars top 100 characters rankings, that was the one that she fought very hard to
get in and
to find on the place.
And the problem was is that Lauren forgot about Zeb. That's for such an unforgettable.
No, I didn't. I was trying to get him in, but like I think it was like Big. I was trying to get him in over like Big's dark lighter or something, and I got shot down. And I'm so mad.
Justice for Big's, but okay.
Because I thought I remembered it is that we had the 100 locked. And then you're like, oh my god, we didn't get Zeb in. And I was like, Lauren, we have too many rebels people in here already.
No, I was trying to toss Big's dark.
How could you do that with a mustache? You're gonna get rid of Big's
I don't care. I mean, come on, Big. You're talking about someone who had one little thing versus someone who had several seasons. But I'm still mad.
Zeb's a great character. It was great to see him, and I do think again, like now that leads the question to be. Is Zeb going to show up in Ahsoka, right? Like, are they planting more seeds for Ahsoka? I would find it, now that they've brought him into live action, there's no way they can't have him on Ahsoka.
Yeah, it's like, well, why would you do all that CGI? And it looked CGI. I have to go back and look at it, but it looked CGI. It didn't look like a guy, because there was a lot of great makeup in this episode, but Zeb definitely looked like he was CGI over. And I think it's possibly just because Zeb is so huge that it's hard to get, someone
well,
to
I think,
do that.
I wonder too, Lauren, if it's like, you know, if you're just making up some kind of creature relatively so you can just put him in any kind of suit, but when you already have that creature existing in exact precise animated form, it might in a weird way be easier to CGI.
I also think probably whatever the human head shape is would not match to like whatever the underneath it would probably not match to what Zeb's like facial structure is, so it might just be easier to make it like make it CGI so it actually really looks like Zeb. So
what's his position here? I mean, like, is like we
yeah, it seemed like he was working with like he had the New Republic insignia on him, so it seemed like he was definitely part of the New Republic. And like, I mean, this seemed like it was the pilot corps, so it seems like Zeb is a pilot. So
and look,
I'm interested if we'll see Agent Callus here, or Agent Callus will pop up,
right?
But yeah.
Adelphi base is kind of banging, by the way. If you're going to get stationed somewhere, like, that's pretty.
The drinks are flowing, you know, the music's going. Like, everybody's just, a distress call comes in and everybody's like, whatever. We'll talk to it.
I mean, like, what some of those, I would think that some of those New Republic, pilots would have been like, we'll go with you to Navarro. We got nothing to do right now. So,
at first, when they first went onto the planet, I was like, is that Scarif? You know, because it does definitely have
I was curious too, as to what it was. Yeah.
So, but I mean, look, it's tropical. Look, if I was a former member of the Rebel Alliance and I had been like stationed on Hoth or whatever, I would be like, great. So for our next base, we're going to go somewhere warm and tropical with a bar and we can just hang out. And also, I love that, we saw this in the first season where, like you mentioned, Rick and Dave and all of these creatives, kind of made brief cameos as New Republic pilots. And I love that because I'm like, okay, if I was making a Star Wars show and I was going to make, a cameo myself, I think that would be kind of a fun thing to do. I would be like, I want to be a pilot. I want to fly an X-Wing. I want to, wear the orange jumpsuit.
Either you want to be a Jedi or you want to be a pilot if you're going to pick it out. So.
Exactly. Yeah. What about you guys? Jedi or pilot?
Jedi.
I go Jedi.
Jedi. Yeah.
Really? I would want to be a pilot. Although,
Only unless, like I said, I've said this before, only if I can blow up Porkin style, then maybe pilot. Like if I can literally be like, I can't shake him. And all of a sudden there's like sparks flying in the cockpit and then I just burst into flames. Or if I can suicide run into something, that would be good too.
Yeah.
But I'm just going to give a shout out to the Ahsoka lightsaber that I found that isn't Ahsoka's lightsaber, but it's a lightsaber with Ahsoka on it that I bought at Target. And then I am now shaking on the podcast.
It looks like a Pez dispenser, Lauren.
It literally doesn't, but it is a lightsaber, Ooh, so yeah,
that's fancy.
They had a Boba Fett one too, but of course I'm going to buy the Ahsoka one.
Obviously.
But yeah, but I saw that and I was like, I'm buying that.
Hold on.
Light up,
there was a Boba Fett lightsaber?
Yeah. It literally has a picture of Boba Fett.
But Boba Fett doesn't use a lightsaber.
Yeah, I don't understand why, but
okay,
who cares?
Just make sure. Make sure we're on the same page on that one. All right, anything else you guys want to talk about from this episode? Carson Teva, do we want to talk about this guy? Really just going at it. This guy really loves Navarro or Greef. I don't know if he like owes Greef Karga debt or what's going on, but
I think he's just like one of he's a good guy. He wants
he's
to do the right
to
thing.
Do, he's trying to keep the New Republic on track, and he is being foiled by bureaucracy and any every way, shape, or form. So
aren't we all? Did you guys make of this, end reveal that, Moff Gideon has been kidnapped, presumably by Mandalorians. Do we think it's really Mandalorians, or do you think it's a frame job? Do you think somebody's,
I'll pose the question one step further to Lauren. Mm-hmm. If it is Mandalorians, is it people that are helping him or want to hurt him, right? Is it a group that's loyal to this? Because we've seen, again, there have been Mandalorians that have worked with the Empire. Or is it people that want to just administer their own brand of justice?
I think it might be people who want to, I know that the Koska Reeves and Axe Wolves were, I think she mentioned they were mercenaries. But I know, didn't Moff Gideon have something to do with the destruction of Mandalore? So I have a feeling they're probably oh, you want us to get this guy? Sure, but we're going to do something to him. I wouldn't be surprised I wouldn't be surprised if it went either way, but. But I'm glad because it's the season's kind of lacked a real villain. And so it's kind of it's always Star Wars, you need a villain.
Because
so
the one thing I've wondered is, what's her face on Coruscant? The one who's in the amnesty program. What's her name, Lauren?
Elia Kane.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who's she working with right now? She's clearly, because the way that it acts is that she's working with Moff Gideon. And that's only really working if Moff Gideon rescued by Mandalorians or someone else rather than, being imprisoned by them.
Yeah.
I think, especially because how brutal that extraction seemed to be, leaving all these bodies behind, that was kind of creepy when, they sent the probe in and where, there's all these frozen bodies, floating in space, from getting, the airlock blown out or whatever. I think that feels more Imperial to me, kind of like Moff Gideon's crew, which makes me think that, Elia Kane is, working directly with him and is super undercover. Either that or she's just really devoted to her job and she's like, he might be dead, but I'm going to keep,
She's so an Imperial true believer, it seems like. So
seems like that's, it.
Yeah. Yeah. But I did like that thing where the confrontation between Captain Teva and her, where he was he's like, you were just captured. You're not, where he was basically calling her out as an Imperial, because you have to imagine that there's probably a ton of anger, even though the New Republic's having this amnesty program, but there's probably a lot of people whose families got killed or murdered or anything by the Empire. So, and if they come against a former Imperial agent, they're not just going to be like, oh yes, not everybody is as forgiving. So I thought that was kind of interesting to see.
Right. I feel like it's one thing for a bureaucrat like Tim Meadows to be like, sure, you're forgiven. You're the amnesty program. I work with you all the time. But it's another thing for somebody who's actually fought in the rebellion and saw combat and, actually actively fought against the Empire, to now be on the same side as some of these people. I imagine that's difficult. So I'm curious kind of how things will shake out. I like this episode. I'm glad we're starting to get a little bit of payoff for some of the threads that we've seen throughout the season. Because I don't know about you guys, but this season's felt a little bit meandering and not, I wasn't always quite sure where it was going. So now I'm like, okay, things are happening. Plot is moving. Let's go. Let's see what happens.
But also, this season is not very din heavy, which is kind of interesting because this episode is not very din heavy either. I mean, Bo-Katan's had a much more prominent role in this season, which I like, but Din really didn't have much to do here. So
that's been one of my biggest complaints this season is that I know obviously Pedro Pascal is busy and we have Brendan Wayne and Lateef Crowder who also wear the suit. But it has been a little weird to me that the show called The Mandalorian is, not necessarily spending that much time with our Mandalorian, the one we know the best. That has been a little bit of a bummer to me. And I hope that Din gets a little bit more to do in the next couple episodes as we start to wrap up the season.
Yeah, you have to figure they're going to wrap him up by the finale. But again, we could get another sort of episode where, maybe not as much. And really, I thought we'd be getting more Grogu. I mean, we got the flashback.
Yeah, we didn't get anything.
We got the flashback and we got sort of him showing some powers went into the mines. But there really has not been tons of Grogu stuff this season in terms of seeing more of his evolution after working apparently for 2 years with Luke Skywalker. Like, if he's with 2 years with that dude, I would figure we would be getting more and at least see a different Grogu, right? Like, and other than a few powers, like, really not so much. Not so much. Maybe they don't want him to be like, you know, when you have like an actual live action show and then like you have the little kids that are all cute and then they start to get old, and like in the family sitcom, they get older and kind of awkward. So they have to bring in a new cute kid, like the new Sam on Different Strokes or the new little Rudy on the Cosby Show, because the other one's like getting a little older. Maybe they just want
Cousin Oliver on the Brady Bunch.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing about having a puppet. You know, he can be Baby Yoda forever.
Or Simpsons, you know, Bart Simpson can be 10 years old forever.
Forever
the funny
and ever.
Thing about The Simpsons was that I was the same age as Bart when The Simpsons started.
Wow.
I was in the same grade when The Simpsons
You don't look
started.
A day over 12, Lauren.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right. We're going to have Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni joining us in just a minute here to talk Mandalorian, and we're going to ask them lots of interesting stuff about it. But this is a double dose because we got one more ways than one because we got the Bad Batch also. It was the season finale of the Bad Batch. They dropped two episodes. I haven't been able to watch it yet, Lauren, but you were slacking me incessantly about it as everything was happening. And you could talk about, we're getting into spoiler stuff here, people.
Yeah, we're getting into spoiler territory.
But before we get into a very big thing that happened on the show, let's talk about what people that don't watch the Bad Batch might be interested in that they brought in a character from a live action show, in fact, from a movie. And there was a sort of a big Rogue One sort of tie in here that might interest some people. Tell us who we saw from Rogue One.
So there was this big meeting with Moff Tarkin, and he had Dr. Hemlock, who we know is leading up this mysterious clone program. But as they were going around and they were sitting around the table like Imperials like to do, chatting. And at one point they cut, and I was like, that person looks like Worsen Krennic. And then they cut again, and I was like, yeah, that does. And then and Moff Tarkin goes, Director Krennic, and I was like, damn, that's him. And literally they got Ben Mendelsohn, and it was Ben Mendelsohn who came in and said one line to talk about Project Stardust, which, as we know, is the Death Star project. And that was Stardust was Jyn Erso's nickname from her father. So like literally they got Ben Mendelsohn to do one line. So I assume he was just doing ADR for something Marvel related, and they just asked him to do this. And but you did see Director Krennic for just a very short scene. It was kind of interesting to finally see him in animation. And then we also saw, although he came in from animation first, we saw Saw Gerrera, who showed up and blew up. Although the Bad Batch was trying to get Dr. Hemlock to find out where Crosshair was being kept, Saw Gerrera also was there at the time, and he is like, I don't really care, I'm blowing this base up. And so Saw basically blew the goddamn base up as the chaos agent that he was. And that was kind of where the first episode sort of ended. So there was various Rogue One elements going on in the first part of the season finale. But then there was part two.
I can't wait to watch both parts, but sticking with part one first. Unless you are certified Rogue One hater Devin Kogan, you will.
That would be I think that would be Darren Franish, because he really hated Rogue One.
That's true.
I'll just a shout out that I was saying this to Lauren too. If you're like dorky enough like me to want to read a prequel to what was a prequel. There's this book Cataclysm that's very good, and it tells all about the construction.
Oh, Catalyst, I think, because Cataclysm is the new one.
Oh, right,
that's
right. See, I keep missing those up. Yeah. Catalyst. Yeah. Cataclysm is the new High Republic book. Catalyst is and it's basically the Project Stardust, and it's basically the building of the Death Star and all this stuff. And you get all this stuff, as you see in the movie Rogue One, but Krennic and Tarkin and how much they hate each other and like going head to head and one wanting to usurp power from the other. It's a pretty cool book. So check that out.
I'm not as rapturous about Rogue One as many people. We don't have time to completely relitigate it, but I do love my boy, Ben Mendelsohn. I will watch Ben Mendelsohn in literally everything. I love him.
He didn't have a cape in this one. He was just purely capeless.
That was my first question. Because
I assume he took the cape off when he came in. But
so good. One of the top tier Star Wars capes. I would say him, Lando, and honestly, I might add Greef Karga from this season.
You know, Krennic's cape is a little wrinkly to me. I wish they had picked a little firmer weight for his cape, because I keep looking at it and I'm like, someone should have steamed that, but that's just me. So,
He's like strutting down, you know, long hallways, I mean, Ben Mendelsohn works it.
It's mostly just a technical aspect of, I'm like, oh, they should have picked a heavier weight cape. But
that's
I don't know why you guys are haters on Reva's cape. I really liked Reva's cape. I thought
cape. I will like say Star cape. Wars does. Star Wars is actually filled with a lot of good capes that, you know, they really do believe in, you know. Do. Yeah, I mean, like also Obi-Wan dropping his, like, you know, well, that was more of a robe drop, but it kind of functioned as a cape.
It's basically capes and bionic arms. That's like it.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
That's kind of the Star Wars vibe.
Anyway, I butchered the name. So just Catalyst is the name of that book if you want to go check that out. If you're feeling. All right, Lauren, real quickly, again, spoilers. Part two of the finale of Bad Batch. Lauren and I were arguing is a strong word, but about this a little bit over something that happened. I haven't even watched it, and I'm already telling her that she's wrong about thinking what happened. So why don't you explain, Lauren?
So, okay. So since Saul made everything blow up, he also, the Bad Batch was in the middle of an escape on a long wired, it's like basically one of those things you see in Disney World, that the thing that it's on the wire and it flies by like a train thing. But it stops them. And then they're trying to escape it and get it started again, because there are stormtroopers coming the other way, trying to shoot them. In the process of trying to escape, Tech dies. Because he winds up hanging off the thing, and it's unbalancing the whole sort of train car. And he basically says he's enacting Plan 99, which is the episode's name, which basically Plan 99 was if the survival of one of the batch members would endanger the rest of the batch, they would just sacrifice themselves. So he basically says to, Wrecker is trying to save him. And, Tech just is like, no, this is Plan 99. And Tech's like, there was something about like following orders. And then Tech responding, he's like, we've never followed orders, so why am I going to start now? And basically like cuts his wire and falls. It seems very, very far. But he falls into a big sort of clouded, thing. But later on, Dr. Hemlock presents Tech's smashed goggles, but we don't see the body. So of course,
there's no way he's dead. He's not dead. Survived.
But the rest of the Bad Batch currently thinks he's dead. Like Omega gets injured in this as well. And so basically the rest of the Bad Batch is treating them as dead. This could be an Echo situation and we find out he's alive and Dr. Hemlock's little cloning facility later on. But as for right now, it seems like Tech is.
So Devin, Lauren's like slacking me. They killed Tech. I'm like, no, they didn't. She's like, I mean, he looks pretty dead. I mean, like, this is. I said, Lauren, does this franchise?
I mean, I can totally believe that he might come back. I kind of hope they don't, because it's. No, it was
of course he will. Because look at this franchise. I mean, look at the evidence and mountain of evidence for you. They literally did this with another member of Clone Troop 99 with Echo on the Clone Wars.
That's true. I would be curious to hear Jennifer Corbett and Brad Rao and whether they
we get them on the phone and we can call them up and like, and you literally say, is he dead? And like, well, you never know. Like out there,
you
things
never
are,
know. But he's not dead. It was interesting though, because Fee, who is played by Wanda Sykes, her and Tech were having a little bit. You could definitely tell there was a little thing going on between them. And so when Tech was taking his leave to go on the mission, she was kind of like chiding him for, Tech was a little bit sort of taken aback by her romantic overtures, because, he is not super functional on that kind of
robot
stuff. So it's kind of like they had that like kind of moment. So you're just sort of like, I wouldn't be surprised if they brought him back, but it was, if they didn't, it was I think
Lauren, he's coming back. I don't know why you say I won't be surprised. There's no chance he's dead. And let me be clear about something else.
There are some clones that
have
died.
Mayday is not one of the main. Mayday is not one of the main clones.
No, he's not one of the main. But the thing is, I would be sad because I think Tech's an interesting character.
No, that's what I'm saying. Lauren, here's the deal. He should be dead. And it's I sound terrible saying this. I want him to be dead. I want him to be dead because I want this franchise to stop doing fake deaths. They're cheap.
It's a fake death.
They're cheap. It's emotional. You know, it's the easiest way to have a big moment and then you don't have the guts to live with the consequences of that decision. Yeah. I hate it. And I'm saying that even feeling as you do that Tech's a great character. I think he's the second best character in the Bad Batch. And you know who I think the first one is. And so I love the character, but if you're going to do it, go through with it.
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah.
But they won't.
So. Yeah, I mean, it is, you know, it is a show for kids, so I wouldn't be surprised if he comes back. I will be disappointed.
Like, consider you're like time to assassinate people on this show for kids.
Yeah,
like,
but anyway, so outside of, you know, the thing is, though, the Bad Batch and Omega think Tech is dead. So they get back to Sid's base. Sid has sold them out to Dr. Hemlock because of the various things that have been going on with Sid this season. Hunter tries to get Omega to escape. Because Dr. Hemlock wants Omega because Nala Se, the Kaminoan who's doing all the cloning stuff, won't do anything. And he thinks if he has Omega to threaten, then he can get her to do it. And basically, it was all kind of battling and stuff, kind of fights. But Dr. Hemlock winds up getting Omega. Echo, Wrecker, and Hunter are all sort of back together. Their goal is to try and find her. They have no idea where she is. They have no idea where this cloning base is. And when we go to the cloning base, Omega's taken to the cloning base, Hemlock talks to Nala Se and is like, I want you to work on the Emperor's cloning project. And Nala Se was like, what? Yeah, she's like, what the Emperor wants is impossible. And he's like, make it possible. So I'm pretty sure Nala Se is trying to work on making another.
Somehow,
you know,
he will return,
body.
Lauren.
Yeah.
Somehow he will return.
Seeing how he finally returned. So, and you go in, and there's a lot of, like, all of the various clones that they've captured, including Crosshair, are in there. But there's a lot of things that look like various vats with beings in them. Basically, this seems like they're trying to engineer a second Palpatine body so he can transfer his consciousness and all of that kind of stuff. So this seems like this is definitely where, you know, the Vat of Snoke's and all of that is coming from. So,
well, like, I don't like, anyway. It's so interesting the way that, please, Lauren, the floor is
one
yours.
More thing, though, the final thing is Emery, who has been Dr. Hemlock's assistant, comes face to face with Omega and reveals that she's Omega's older sister. And she's actually played by Keisha Cashel Hughes, who was in one of the original prequel trilogies.
She was.
But she is of also Maori descent. And she said I think she is a female clone who has been rapidly aged, whereas Omega hasn't been. So she revealed that she is related to Omega and basically the rest of the clones. So that was how the episode ended.
Remember how we talked last week about how there's just more and more Jedi that weren't killed during Order 66?
Yeah. There's so many.
This is like the version there's more and more clones, like just like different kind of clones. We got girl clones. We got kid clones. We got adult. Like, it's just like more and more clones are out there.
Eventually Rey's dad is going to, show up here somewhere. As someone nicknamed him, I know he's not named this now because they've actually named him, but someone, I think right after Rise of Skywalker, called him Brian Palpatine. And so ever since then, I just call him Brian Palpatine.
I
think he has an official name now, but I just still call him Brian Palpatine.
Yeah, just some guy named Brian.
Brian Palpatine.
I swear we're going to get to Filoni and Favreau in just a second, but it's really interesting that they're, whether you watch the cartoons or not, that they're really making such an emphasis to go in the cloning direction, knowing like how underwhelmed everyone was by the Palpatine clone storyline and Rise of Skywalker.
They're trying to retroactively make it interesting or like it made any kind of sense. And I'm sort of like when we saw that thing with Dr. Pershing on The Mandalorian, I'm like, you really are trying to make this Palpatine cloning thing like actually make sense in a logical thing rather than just being I don't know, J.J. Abrams came up with it.
It's like that weird thing where like if you had a character on a show that wasn't working, you really have two sort of ways you can go. You can try to fix the character or you just cut bait. You just like write them off the show. This isn't working, whatever. It's our fault,
like
the writers' performance.
They killed Nikki and Paula.
Right.
They're just like, oh, these aren't
or
working.
On the Good Wife when they got rid of Kalinda's weird husband from Canada or whatever. Like they just like, let's get, and they said that the kings were like, yeah, that was not working. The audience spoke to us. We got him out of there. But it's like, they're trying the opposite. They're trying to like, you know, like, I guess make Rise of Skywalker make a little more sense, but I just don't know if it's worth it. I don't know anyone. You have to care about the destination to want to take the journey. And I'm not sure people really care about this destination.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like how on the animation side, the Clone Wars made the prequels interesting again. You know, the Clone Wars took so many of the things that a lot of people hated about the prequels and made them interesting and gave them depth and fleshed them out. But I think part of that was, like you said, Dalton, it's because we cared about the end destination. We cared about, you know, the Clone Wars was leading up to this ultimate betrayal where Anakin betrays Obi-Wan and goes to the dark side. Whereas I don't really care about the Vat of Snoke's. I don't really care about somehow Palpatine returned. You know, so I'm curious to see kind of how this continues and kind of what comes next.
All right. Well, we'll have another. We got to wait till the next season comes out to find out where it's going. But maybe we'll get some answers possibly at Star Wars Celebration, which is coming up very soon. And we will have lots of content for you. We have another show before that happens, but that is coming up around the corner in London. And we will be there getting lots of great stuff for you. All right. Speaking of great stuff, it's not every week that we have the two big shots running The Mandalorian on our show, but it is this week. I had a chance to chat with Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni about season 3 of The Mandalorian. I had actually asked them whether any members of the Ghost crew might show up, which one just did. We also talked about if we might be seeing a live-action Cal Kestis at any point and how many seasons of The Mandalorian they want to do. If you want to hear straight from the source, then stay tuned because we have Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni coming up right after this quick break. Season 3 is finally here. You guys saw you got scripts already for season 4. So obviously I'm wondering, how long is this show going to go? How long in your eyes do you see this, The Mandalorian, going on? How many seasons are we looking at?
I've really enjoyed working with this group of people and these characters. And as the stories start to fill up from the time period becomes much more clear because of the stories that we've told over the previous years and in both the Book of Boba Fett and The Mandalorian, as well as Ahsoka and Skeleton Crew, we're starting to get a really rich backdrop for these stories to be told. And so that's very inspiring to me. And I love collaborating with all these different filmmakers and different storytellers, both from the directors we work with and other showrunners like Dave and like John Watts and Chris Ford. So I don't know what would make me not enjoy doing it, especially as long as the audience is connecting with these characters. This feels like a really enjoyable moment. And I love this format of telling one chapter at a time and keeping the audience guessing, but also fulfilling certain expectations. It's a really wonderful format. And you really grow to appreciate having such a good team around you that for each new film you would have to assemble. But now we get to inherit this great group of talented people that we could work with every year.
And Dave, as John's talking about these shows sort of merging and mixing together, we know we do have the Ahsoka series coming up. So with that in mind, should we expect any members of the Ghost crew to be showing up on season 3 of The Mandalorian at all?
Oh, I don't know. You never know. I mean, it's a big galaxy. We try to keep it feeling like a big galaxy. I think it's always the same. If there's opportunity, if it makes sense, if we're in a certain place and you go, well, that person would be there, then great. You know, and if there's a purpose for them, we have a lot of conversations about, you know, who could show up where, even just generally on characters that maybe wouldn't be as obvious to people because, you know, growing up with Star Wars, there is a history there. There are a bunch of characters almost anywhere you look on the timeline. And it's always a question of, should we use that character or is it just somebody else? Sometimes it's exciting, equally exciting to make someone new. You know, no one knew Mando, no one knew Grogu before John plucked them out of the stars. And here they are, these probably bedrock characters for many people as much as Luca and Han and Leia were for me as a kid. So,
and George kept adding characters too.
He always added characters.
He added Boba Fett, Darth Maul. Like the new characters arguably are some of the
favorites. Little news, the best way when it makes sense. Yeah.
Balance.
Well, let me ask you about more recent history then, because, you know, there's a new Star Wars Jedi video game coming out. Seems like a reasonable time for me to ask if you guys have talked about bringing Cal Kestis and the Mantis crew to life at some point in some show. Has that been discussed at all?
Well, we did have our little robot in there, our little droid. What did we name him? 71? BD-71.
I would have named a penguin number like Crosby. I'd have called it 87 or 71.
We really appreciate all the good Star Wars stories that are being told across multimedia. And one of the things I'm most proud of about what we're able to accomplish with the show is to pull in different sets of characters and storylines, and each generation and each group connects with a different aspect of Star Wars. And I love that we are able to incorporate things that I remember from when I was 10, things that feel like deep cuts and Easter eggs of things like the rifle that he uses was from the holiday special, the Camtono, the ice cream maker from Wilro Hood, like, and then having prequels, sequels, Clone Wars, and even expanded universe aspects that we could all pull into our show so that there's something for everybody, no matter what you connect with Star Wars. This is a place where all the Star Wars fans are welcome, and hopefully they're enjoying the show.
Obviously, you guys brought younger Luke back to life last season with using the sort of the CGI, the re-speecher technology. Is that something you'd be interested in revisiting with other original trilogy characters, or was that just kind of a very special one-off that fit really well with that story?
I think for me, Luke made the most sense. You know, when we're dealing with a young force-wielding character in Grogu, and you say who would be the absolute best mentor for him, it's obviously Luke in this time period. And so that was a big discussion. We talked to Mark, you know, we talked to Kathleen Kennedy. We said, we're thinking of bringing Luke in. What do you guys think of that? It's a big deal because, you know, we all care about those characters because they're George's characters and they have their history. They did what they needed to do, but obviously he'd be a great caretaker for a young Grogu. So it was a challenging thing to do, having directed that one particular episode where he showed up quite a bit. And, you know, I don't know, I'd be very careful about whenever we use that technology but mainly those characters. It's just a good way to take care of them. There are all kinds of ways to have characters show up that don't even need to be on screen, and you can feel their presence or they're active in, you know, in our time period. So I don't know, it really just is what's the demand of the story and how well do we think we can do it is basically what it comes down to.
Well, how is that story moving forward as a result of that? Like, John, how has Grogu now changed in season 3 after meeting Ahsoka, training with Luke? What are his powers now looking like?
Well, I think that, you know, he has benefited tremendously by the time spent with Luke Skywalker. And although he ultimately chose not to forego the central relationship and bond that he had developed, an attachment he had developed to the Mandalorian, and opted to leave Luke's, you know, the fledgling academy that he's developing to train young Jedi and went off to rejoin Din Djarin, the Mandalorian, he did spend time with one of the best, you know, one of the most powerful Jedi and best teachers. And I think that Luke, what we demonstrated was that there was an understanding between the two of them, because Luke has been marched a bit to the beat of his own drummer. I don't know that he holds all of the Jedi teachings to be as literal. He has also formed friendships as well. And I think he appreciated in Grogu that he really wanted to go off and be with his friend, just like Luke, when he was younger, had wanted to help his friends out and left his training with Yoda. So I think Luke was able to pack a lot of training into that period of time. We've also spent 2 years apart from them. You know, we checked in with them a little bit in Book of Boba Fett, but enough time has been spent that you're going to see a significant change in this character, because he's no longer the helpless infant that the Mandalorian first encountered.
Dava, you got a long history with Bo-Katan, that character. Bo-Katan wants to rule Mandalore, but Din has the Darksaber, which gives him that claim. So what does that mean for their relationship in season 3?
That's a tough one. You know, Katie and I had a lot of talks about it. She knows that character inside out. It's a character that obviously goes way back for her and I. And, you know, originally we had dreams of maybe one day it becoming live action, and here it is. So, you know, she's a tough character. She's definitely been a warrior her whole life. And I think it's a challenging thing. Obviously, in season two, she likes Din Djarin, but, you know, there's obviously also a conflict of interest there with the Darksaber and what it means iconically for her, what it represents for Mandalore. So, you know, easy ways to say season three, just watch it. That's the best thing. I always say it's not as fun to hear me tell the story as it is to watch the story. So just stay tuned and see what happens.
I got to know, Dave, will there be a Trapper Wolf appearance in season three?
Oh, gosh. We want the show to be good.
Now, that's a question. You should have started with that one.
Our thanks to Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni for hanging out with us this week. And thank you for hanging out with us. We love hanging out. And we would also love it if you could please follow and rate and review the podcast. If you do so, we'll read your review and give you a shout out right here on the pod. You can connect with us on social media by following Entertainment Weekly on all socials. It's at EW on Twitter and at Entertainment Weekly everywhere else. You can also tag and follow us directly using at Dalton Ross, at Devin Kogan, and at Morg Lore. Thanks so much, everyone. We'll do it all over again next week.
This episode of Dagobah Dispatch is hosted by Dalton Ross, Devin Kogan, and Lauren Morgan. Produced by Chanel Johnson and Sammy Junio. Edited by Sammy Junio. Full episode transcripts are available at EW.com. Thanks for listening.